Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It's brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. They're here to help you secure your Bitcoin and then give you financial services on top of that. One of those services is their Bitcoin IRA, which allows you to easily transition your IRA from fiat assets into Bitcoin without taking a tax hit. So if you're sitting there watching the price of Bitcoin run and you're thinking, man, I should really get some Bitcoin. I don't have any liquid cash, or maybe my liquid cash that won't get me enough Bitcoin. I have this IRA account. I don't want to take the tax hits by liquidating that and then buying Bitcoin. This is why Unchained and their IRA product exists. The beauty of their IRA product is you get to hold your own keys too. It's a 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum where Unchained holds one key and you hold two. So you have control of the Bitcoin in your IRA, which is a beautiful thing. So go hit up their consultation team. To learn more about this, go to unchained.com/consultation. Tell them that Rabbit Hole Recap sent you. Get started today. Unchained.com/consultation. This rip was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space. I got my Block Clock Mini right behind me. I have my Tap Signer, my Sats cards in my wallet. Tap Signer is a private key in a card form factor, credit card form factor. The Sats card is something that you can load Bitcoin up and hand it as a bearer interest to somebody. It's great for gifts, birthday gifts, wedding gifts. You tap it on the back of your phone, click the link, you get an address, you send Bitcoin to that. It lives on the Sats card, put it in an envelope, hand it to somebody for their birthday or their wedding. Great wedding gift. My favorite wedding gift to give. They also had the MK4, the Mark IV, which is the best hardware device on the market. It's got 2 secure elements. It's NFC enabled, allows you to easily create private public key pairs offline, which is very important. You don't want to be creating your private keys on an internet connected device. You can also easily add entropy to your private key with dice rolls, which is important as well. They also have the Q1, which will be released soon. They're taking pre-orders for that, and that is got all the same internal guts as the Mark IV. 2 secure enclaves, NFC enabled, but it's also got a full keyboard, bigger screen, and has a QR code scanner. They make the best hardware in the space, hands down. So go to coinkite.com. Don't know if we have a promo code, try RHR, try CD, try TFTC, but just go get the hardware. Prepare. You want it before you need it. So just go get some. Enjoy this rip. Thank you.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
That was a good point, Logan. What is up, freaks? Friday afternoon, happy hour rip. Uncle Marty got a claw for the first time in quite a while on Rabbit Hole Recap. It's that time of the week.
I got some tasty ranch water over here. Damn, dude, it's been a long fucking week. Good week. Bullish.
Look at this. 44,360 on the Block Clock. I like that. Almost fours across the board.
Pretty soon I'm going to be able to dust off my locked-in Block Clock.
Was that at like 56?
Yes, I think so. It was when I moved from New York. Yeah, it was like 52 or 56 or something. I have to find it. I think it's in a box downstairs. I refuse to plug it in until we pass it.
Well, you heard it here first, freaks. We need to pump the price so Matt can turn in that second Block Clock. You don't even have the one behind you on.
Yeah, it's just all.
That's a bit blasphemous. I mean, you have one of the rarest Block Clock Minis in the world, and you don't use it.
It's true. Guilty. I'll plug it in. There's no like convenient. I guess there is a convenient outlet because I have my noddle right underneath it, and there's a router down here. So there are outlets. I have no good excuses. I'll plug it in.
Nice. How are you feeling?
I'm tired. It's been a long week. A lot of work. Good work.
A lot of work. Good work. Like to hear good work.
We had there was like a 30-person Bitcoin dinner in Atlanta yesterday. I drove down for it and then drove back up. Incredibly bullish.
Yeah.
I'll say that much.
Yeah, we promised last week that this week's episode would be on Thursday again, but I completely forgot Matt had that Atlanta dinner, which I should have known about. It was 10:31 on chain dinner, so.
Yeah, I didn't want to dox the dinner ahead of time. So I just like, oh, yeah, Thursday, definitely. And then when we got off air, I was like, Marty, it can't be Thursday.
But we're here now, every week. Big week, a lot going on. Where do you want to start? Let's just start with Clark's dashboard. And then we'll jump into the topics of the week. Current price, according to Clark's dashboard, is above what my block clock is saying right now. It's 44,565 cuck bucks. One cuck buck's going to get you 2,244 sats. We are sitting at an $872 billion market cap, quickly approaching a trillion. Again, there are currently 19,564,274.28 Bitcoin on the market. We're at block height 820,318, which means we are less than 20,000 blocks away from the next halving. Less than 20,000 blocks, 19,682 blocks away from the next halving. That was good Marty math on the go. We are 194 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, which shockingly enough is looking like a negative adjustment of 1.8%. Blocks been coming in at 10 minutes and 12 seconds on average. That adjustment is estimated to be on December 10th, which is Sunday. Should be early Sunday. Here in the central part of the United States, there are currently 65,168 transactions in Clark's mempool. If we go over to mempool.space, there are currently 184,408 transactions in Wiz's mempool. Fees have come down below 100 sats per V-byte for high priority, currently sitting at 70 sats per V-byte. If you're looking to get into the next block, mempool is relatively cheap right now compared to where it has been over the last couple weeks. There are currently 9,908.76 Bitcoin in unspent capacity, approaching five figures quickly in Samurai's Whirlpool. Maybe that's where we start. I want to start with Capitol Hill, Jamie Dimon, Liz Warren.
Before we go there, on the halving, I'm a little bit tired, so don't mistake my monotone voice for lack of excitement. But I just don't think people are truly appreciating how bullish of a setup we are in right now. We are trading at $44,000. In rates are up, rates are high for recently. I mean, not compared to like the 80s, but interest rates are high. We're in a high interest rate environment. But Bitcoin is trading near all-time highs. There's very few days where we are above this level, you know, maybe a month or 2 months. Macro environment, inflation's ripping, but people are pretending inflation's not ripping. People think gold's at an all-time high while we drink their milkshake, and gold is just trading lower and lower in terms of Bitcoin value. Halving's April 20th. I was listening to Bloomberg today. Supposedly, the Fed tea leaves people think the Fed will pivot in March. And we have a bunch of ETFs about to get approved. And once the ETFs get approved, there's a 45-day window before you can start trading them where all of the promoters are allowed to start talking about it. So like Larry Fink, Kathy Wood, all these people.
Barry.
They have not been allowed to talk about it. They've been relatively limited on what they can talk about. And as soon as those approvals happen, like CNBC, everything is just going to be a constant Bitcoin shill fest. It's going to be like Bitcoin's the best, but also like buy my ETF. My ETF's the best of all the ETFs. So all of this shit is coming together in a point in Bitcoin cycle where we're usually dealing. Oh, and then hash rate is just fucking going crazy to the upside. Like if you look at the hash rate chart and you look 2 years ago where everyone was freaking out about the Chinese mining ban, it looks like a fucking blip in the radar. Meanwhile, like we're in a point in the Bitcoin cycles historically where like right now we'd start to hear the Bitcoin mining spiral death FUD, right? Like, oh, the miners aren't going to be profitable. Bitcoin's going to die. Like everything's going to be shit. Like this setup is like you couldn't write a more bullish setup than what we're living in right now.
And to add to all of this, I think this particular halving is going to shock a lot of people because we've had Bitcoin launched in 2009, 50 Bitcoin per block, 2012, I believe, maybe late 2011, 2012, cut down to 25, 2016, down to 12.5, 2020, down to 6.25. I don't know, maybe I'm an idiot, but I think like the cut from 6.25 to 3.125 per block, like I think people recognizing that there's only 3.125 Bitcoin being distributed to the market every block is going to be a psychological trigger that really induces FOMO. Like 6.25, it's like, yeah, it's a good amount of Bitcoin, but like 3.125, it's like, oh, that's not that many. And then you think about the halving after that, it's like, oh, that's going to go to what, 1. God, I can't even do the math. Let me do.
I just want to be clear here. I don't know if I misspoke because I'm tired, but I see BTC Pin's comment in the live chat. By the way, freaks, you can join us in the Nostr live chat at rhr.tv/stream. The halving is not like a locked in date. If hash rate continues to increase at a fast pace, we will most likely have the halving before April 20th. So we might be even closer to where the Fed pivots, or maybe the Fed never pivots, or maybe the Fed pivots tomorrow. I don't know how the fucking shit works. I don't think anyone really does. They just make a decision.
Yeah. So we have 3.125, and then after that, it gets down to 1.5625. And I think 3.125 is a small enough number where people are like, oh, crap, this Bitcoin is not easy to get.
Yeah, the scarcity starts. I mean, people, I don't really appreciate scarcity. This is they're about to get a mass. The suits are about to get a massive lesson in scarcity. And just to be like, it doesn't even matter if the Fed pivots. That's the point. The crazy part is that we're trading at $44,000 leading up to a halving while the Fed has been tightening and money is not cheap. Fucking crazy.
Yeah. So we're bullish. We're bullish here.
Also, mempools are quite busy.
Yeah, they're less busy than they were earlier this week. So,
cope.
That is cope. I'm going to be coping harder between now and Christmas Eve. We've got less than 20 days, 16 days. We'll see. All right, let's jump into the list. Let's just start with Capitol Hill. I haven't even looked at the list yet. But you don't even have this on the list. Do you not have this on the list?
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren and Jamie Dimon's tag team.
Yeah.
I mean, it's irrelevant, but
well, we did. Logan, you pull up the U.S. Treasury seeks massive expansion of warrantless surveillance and powers to sanction open source software, because I think it pertains to this. Who knows whether all of this is coordinated, but it is a bit coincidental how quickly all of this has unfolded over the last 2 weeks. Last week, the Treasury wrote a letter of suggestions to the Senate Banking and House Financial Services Committees. So the Senate Banking Committee and the House Financial Services Committees got letters from the Treasury Department, which were filled with suggestions for regulations that they would like to see signed into law, particularly pertaining to how full node operators, mining pools, and non-custodial wallets are defined. They essentially want these entities to be defined as financial institutions that fall under the Bank Secrecy Act and have to follow the letter of the law in the Bank Secrecy Act. And you can see how that would make sense for exchanges and financial service providers in the Bitcoin space. However, when you get into Bitcoin mining pools and full node, I mean, they have validators in there, which essentially means full nodes. That's where things get really hairy and to begin infringing on civil liberties of individuals to run free and open source code. So you had that come out last week. And then quickly after that, you had the Senate Banking Committee meet, and they had all the largest bank executives from the largest banks in the United States up on Capitol Hill, and Elizabeth Warren took the opportunity to lean into her vendetta against Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, saying that it finances terrorism and needs to be banned. And she asked the executives what their thoughts were. And Jamie Dimon came out and said, I would close it down as soon as possible. So it seems...
I would shut it down.
it seems somewhat coordinated. Logan, do you have the clip that we can pull up?
I was looking for it. I thought it was in the last trade thing somewhere.
Should be on the TFTC page. You can find it.
All right.
Is this coordinated, Matt?
When I saw it, my first thought was that Jamie is just trying to fill his bags.
Fill his bags, really?
Look, there's a bid on Bitcoin right now. I think people have been trying to front run BlackRock and the ETFs for the last 8 months, and it's running away from them. So it's a common suit strategy. You know, you FUD your target as you're accumulating, and then afterwards it all becomes obvious. Who is that suit that was doing that to us last cycle?
Scaramucci?
No. Someone with actual money.
I forget. Larry Fink?
No. I'll think about it.
All right, we'll play the video while you think about it. It's only 30 seconds.
I've always been deeply opposed to crypto, Bitcoin, etc. You pointed out the only true use case for it is criminals, drug traffickers, anti-money laundering, tax avoidance, and that is a use case because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously, and because it doesn't go through, as you mentioned, all these systems built up over many years, know your customer, sanctions, OFAC, they can get bypass all of that. If I was the government, I'd close it down.
Okay.
Close it down. Jamie Dimon said it first. Particularly annoying considering the fact that Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan Chase just paid a $75 million settlement to avoid going to discovery again with the U.S. Virgin Islands. And the U.S. Virgin Islands was putting a lawsuit up against JP Morgan for facilitating the sex trafficking operation of Jeffrey Epstein over the course of 15 years. And so they just paid $75 million in hush money. We don't want this to go to discovery. And this is a projection tactic. So you think he's trying to fill his bags. I think this is just pure projection. The incumbent banking system projecting all the crimes that they enable and they facilitate onto Bitcoin. Because if you look at the data in Bitcoin, he said... Jamie Dimon said money laundering and criminal activity is the true use case. But if you look at the data on chain, particularly, you can see that 70% of Bitcoin hasn't moved. More than 70% of Bitcoin hasn't moved in over a year. More than 30% hasn't moved in more than 5 years. Just looking purely at the data, it seems that most people on the network are using Bitcoin as a long-term savings vehicle and not as some sort of money laundering vehicle. So I think it's projection. I'm trying to say, hey, we need these guys to look like the bad guys, even though we're doing all the bad stuff ourselves.
I mean, maybe. I think he's trying to fill his bags. I mean, if you unpack it a little bit, right? He shows more knowledge of Bitcoin than he's ever shown before, except
somewhat
for the
anonymous.
Shutdown.
Somewhat anonymous.
Yeah, he got the privacy aspect correct. And he's absolutely correct that, you know, it'll be much more difficult to enforce sanctions. The only part he really got wrong was like, I would just close it down. Like, what the fuck that means, right? So to me, it just felt like very cheap, easy FUD.
It all felt very coordinated, though. You had that treasury letter, and you had this meeting.
And you can't, all this is exclusive of the ETF, right? It's like, you can FUD Freedom Bitcoin, which also hurts the price of Bitcoin. Hope for better, they want it to be regulatory captured, right? Like the big banks would love for Bitcoin to become this like financial asset that they control.
Are they going to get their way? That's the question. Are you going to let them get their way? I hope not. What's he doing? I don't know. Is there a fly in front of you? Something's going on with Matt's setup now. But anyway, moving to more bullish thoughts on this topic. Elizabeth Warren got completely obliterated on Twitter this week. She got ratioed by, I think, 30 different people on one tweet. She's also pushing the CBDC. And as it pertains to that, I don't think there's any continuity at that level of the political apparatus with the federal government and the Fed, particularly with whether or not a CBDC in the United States will actually materialize. Obviously, the system that's set up now is already essentially a CBDC. They can cut anybody off and freeze anybody's money if they want. A CBDC in the way it's envisioned would give them a bit more granular control, but we're essentially already there. But with that being said, Elizabeth Warren's beating the drum for a CBDC while you have many other politicians and many Fed governors saying, no, we don't want a CBDC. So Elizabeth Warren did get a lot of tick this week, but I don't think anybody's picking up what she's putting down. You're blurry now. What'd you do?
Dude, my internet's complete shit right now. I'm trying to troubleshoot. Continue. Okay.
You troubleshoot. I'll continue. We'll go back to the list. And this is a big story. It didn't really get picked up too much, but if you're using a Ledger hardware wallet, be aware, Ledger Live is tracking and sending all of your information to outsource data harvesting services. So there's somebody on Twitter, Rec Builder. Pull up the tweet from Rec Builder. Or actually, not tweet. He's got a blog. Here, wait, I'll read the blog. I know we love Uncle Marty reading on
there. Okay, I think I got it.
Here, Logan here. Go to Slack. So he basically did a deep analytical dive. So I've been experimenting with a local copy of Ledger Live. As you probably know, it's an Electron app. So it runs like a web application inside a web browser-like environment that you can run like a native app. This means you can open a developer console just like in Chrome and view network requests, event handlers, and so on. I ran Ledger Live and opened the network tab just out of curiosity. And what I found was more than a little concerning. The application phones everything about your device and your funds to an outsource endpoint, which is api.segment.io/vl/t. The payload is a JSON object with a properties key. Inside properties, there is an account with funds object, which sends segment.io accounts with funds along with NFTs. That's not even a Ledger. So they're not even sending it to a Ledger endpoint. It's an outsourced data collection service. And if that weren't bad enough, they submitted the payload also contains a user ID and write key, which probably identify your devices uniquely, along with tons of other data like device model, how much space you've used, your operating system version, and so on. It'd be understandable if Ledger Live were using this data locally to determine whether you can install additional apps and so on, but why is it sending everything across the network? Too long, don't read. Didn't read. Ledger Live is phoning out data on assets you hold in your hardware wallet the moment you access Ledger Live. It's also sending out tons of other info about your computer and devices. And then he dug a bit deeper and found a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. So they're basically sending this data to like third-party advertising networks so that they can target you. But as we know, this data is never really secure. Ledger doesn't have a great history with data security, and it is pretty... Is it really surprising that they're doing this? No, but it is disconcerting to see nonetheless. So if you are using Ledger, the recommendation...
This is fucked up.
This is very fucked up.
This is incredibly fucked up. They're using a lot of the trackers are going to external endpoints. They're going to other companies. It's not even Ledger spying on you in a vertically integrated stack. They like combined it with all of the critical functioning code. Like it's like embedded in everything. An easy solution is to not use Ledger. Just get a cold card. If you do have a Ledger and you insist on using Ledger, you can use Sparrow Wallet with your Ledger and you skip that process. You don't have to use Ledger Live. I think you still might have to use Ledger Live for like the setup or something like that. So you're still exposing yourself to some trackers. I would just switch. But keep in mind, this is a privacy risk, not specifically a security risk. Privacy risks can lead to security risks because you make yourself a target. and many other things. You know, people know all your transactions and what you're doing and whatnot, and your balances and everything. But this is completely unacceptable. I haven't seen any response. I haven't seen any formal response from CoinDesk's, one of CoinDesk's most influential people of the year, Pascal of Ledger, the CEO. I think, did this guy say, I like briefly was looking through it. Did you just, I think he said 6,000 trackers he found. In this case, this particular guy's a shitcoiner. So he wants to use it with a shitcoin called Avalanche. So he can use Sparrow. Sparrow's not an option for him. And I think Trezor doesn't support Avalanche either. So he needs Ledger Live. I think he forked Ledger Live and is trying to remove as many trackers as possible so he can still use it. Yeah, Jevy's saying you still need Ledger Live for firmware updates. Just toss the Ledger. How many different pieces do you need to just move on to a better piece of hardware?
Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me three times, you can't be fooled again. George Bush. You know the saying. Now, what he says here, wrecked builder. God, the shitcoiners, man. Is there any hope for them? He cleaned up a bunch. There's still 310 files, so they're sending a lot of data back.
It's really fucked up. Now that my internet's back, I just, on the Jamie Dimon stuff, like, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, it's definitely projection. Like, they are guilty of all the things he said. It's part of their business model. But I think it could be both, right? Like, I think what we're seeing is, I think he's trying to build a position in Bitcoin and it's running away from him. If that's not the case for him, it's definitely the case for a lot of other suits. And then the second piece is we are definitely seeing a coordinated move to try and capture Bitcoin in America and try and make it this regulated asset that is controlled by major financial institutions. And they have a lot of money to make for that. So in this case, he would kill two birds with one stone on that, right?
Yeah.
And like, so this treasury news, it's easy to get confused because like we have FinCEN stuff, we have treasury stuff, Elizabeth Warren's like sending letters to people. It's just all over the place. There's a shit ton of activity in terms of we're seeing companies feeling pressure behind the scenes. Like banks that they work with are feeling pressure and then the banks go and hit them. Like it's crazy out here right now.
Yeah. We got to dig in. What do you say, Matt? What do you say?
Rights live for your fucking die.
Rights are taken and defended. They're not going to be given to you.
There you go.
We're at a point where we
rights are not granted. They're taken and defended.
Yes. We've taken the rights. What's particularly alarming about the FinCEN letter, or excuse me, the Treasury letter, is the designation of open source software as like a financial institution, or people writing open source software as individuals who are putting financial products into the world. And that is how you attack self-custody. You create a environment of fear where developers are too afraid to contribute to these open source projects in the first place because they don't want the anvil of the law to fall on them in the future. And you're somewhat forced via lack of options to use these custodial options that will be controlled by the financial institutions. So we need to fight back against this pretty vigorously.
Yeah, I think on all fronts.
Yeah. You're going to have to be defended. That's the thing. If you have Bitcoin in self-custody and you're leveraging these open source software tools, you've taken the right. You have Bitcoin in self-custody. You're securing it. Now it needs to be defended. Your right, your ability to do that needs to be defended. They're attacking it. How we do that, I don't have all the answers. We won't solve that on this particular episode. Maybe we'll do it on a bunch of episodes moving forward, but be prepared. They're coming for it. It's not bad to secure your own wealth. It should be an inalienable right that everybody should have the ability to do at the end of the day, to think that you need to hand over the control of your wealth to a regulated financial institution is a thought that needs to be ridiculed and destroyed at the end of the day. You should not need to depend on a financial institution to secure your wealth. If you're willing to take the risk to do it yourself, you should be able to do that without any government coming and telling you that you can't.
And the ETFs are shitcoins.
Yes.
You're not buying Bitcoin. You're buying exposure, price exposure to Bitcoin. It's an IOU. It requires immense amount of trust. Most of them are going to be custodied with Coinbase. Brian Armstrong gets to take his place as the dark lord of the coin.
The dark lord of the coin.
Like FTX, straight Ponzi scheme, but they tried to use him to attack CZ. CZ kills FTX. Then the suits regroup. Then they take out CZ. They hit CZ hard. And then Coinbase emerges.
They got one last one to take down.
The mother of all the ETFs.
I think they got one more they're going to try and take down.
Are you talking about Tether?
Yeah.
Bitfinex?
Yeah.
Well, to be clear, they didn't take down Binance. They just hit them with a heavy-headed fine. So.
Yeah, I mean, they Bitmexed them. They took them behind the shed, shot them in the head, and said, all right, you can come back to work under the conditions that we set forth.
And then I know I'm jumping all around the place, but if you're using a ledger right now, I have a high school friend who saw the ledger news on Twitter. Since the price started pumping, he's been in for a while. He was like the only high school friend that listened to me. Like we were in high school.
I know this friend
at the time and afterwards. And since the price ran up, he's just checking Twitter and just sending me screenshots of things that are freaking him out because all the FUDders are out there. I mean, not this ledger thing is not FUD, but there's like this new FUD narrative that like the suits are just pumping up the price of Bitcoin to kill all the plebs, and like they're playing games with you. Don't buy now, sell now, you know, all this shit. But he sent me the ledger thing and he uses a ledger and he was freaking out. Fortunately, I had given him a cold card for his wedding already. So he had a cold card just sitting in a fresh bag, unopened. So if you are using a ledger, number one rule is do not panic. Take a deep breath. You've already exposed all your private information to Ledger and their external parties. Okay, that already happened. Okay. You're gonna set up a cold card or another hardware wallet with Sparrow. Create a brand new wallet, brand new seed and everything. Do it the right way. Take some time. Send a small test transaction to the new wallet from your ledger. Then
send the rest.
Then send it back from the cold card to the ledger to make sure you know what the fuck you're doing and you feel comfortable. And then you can then send the rest over. And I have a full guide for cold card at rerunbtc.com/cold card. But deep breaths.
I mean, I don't want to gloat. It feels like a bad time to gloat, but I'm proud to have never owned a ledger and not have to think that this is a problem for me.
Shout out to you.
Shout out to me. Shout out to me. All right, moving on down the list. Apple came out earlier this week and confirmed that the government is using push notifications to surveil users. Unidentified governments are surveilling smartphone users by tracking push notifications that move through Google's and Apple's servers, as U.S. Senator Wyden warned on Wednesday. In a letter to the Department of Justice, Senator Ron Wyden said foreign officials were demanding the data from Alphabet's Google and Apple. The traffic flowing from apps that send push notifications put the companies in a unique position to facilitate government surveillance of how users are using particular apps, Wyden said. He asked the Department of Justice to repeal or modify any policies that hindered public discussions of push notification spying. In a statement, Apple said that Wyden's letter gave them the opening they needed to share more details with the public about how governments monitor push notifications. In this case, the federal government prohibited us from sharing any information. Now that this method has become public, we are updating our transparency reporting to detail these kinds of requests, the company told Reuters. A source familiar with the matter confirmed that both foreign and U.S. government agencies have been asking Apple and Google for metadata related to push notifications. The data is said to have been used to attempt to tie anonymous users of messaging apps to specific Apple or Google accounts. The Reuters source would not identify which governments were making the data requests, but described them as democracies allied to the United States. They did not know how long the request had been going on for. Apple advises developers not to include sensitive data in notifications and to encrypt any data before adding it to the notification payload. Earlier this year, French developer David Lebel said users and developers were often unaware of how their apps submitted data to U.S. tech giants via push notifications, calling them a privacy nightmare. Which countries are top on the list that are abusing this? U.S. allies.
I feel like it's probably the Five Eyes.
France, Canada, U.K.,
U.S. Australia.
I was going to say Canada. I think it's definitely Canada.
Who did you put in there? It's U.S., Canada, U.K., Australia.
France.
Is it? Or did you just throw that on there? I don't know who the fifth is. But these are countries that have, they all have surveillance agreements. New Zealand? New Zealand's in the Five Eyes. But then they also have the Eight Eyes. They're all sharing all this shit and spying on all of us. I will say Daniel McKay, and the former lead maintainer of GrapheneOS, has been all over this push notification vulnerability. Like it's...
What is it about push notifications specifically that leaks this metadata? Does it communicate with your phone provider?
What do you mean?
I don't
like
know.
It's literally getting pushed from their server. The app developers are using the centralized push notification servers of Apple and Google to push notifications that to you.
There we go.
That are often not encrypted, not end-to-end encrypted, and it wakes the phone, and the phone touches the towers and all this shit.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
But like, if like, imagine like I send you a payment and you get a push notification. It's like, oh, Matt just sent you this payment for this stuff. And it's, they have that.
I get a lot of those notifications.
Matt called you. Matt sent you a text. Yeah. You know, like your whole life is in push notifications. Everyone's, yeah. It, so much shit is in there.
God damn it. Do you ever just want to go Uncle Ted?
The politics, it is absolutely, it is fucking exhausting and tiresome because it shouldn't have to be this way. Like people shouldn't have to,
I'm going to do it.
No, we don't, Marty.
Do we live in a free country, Freeze?
Yeah, NBK is also saying that a lot of devs add metadata to it. He called them shit devs, but a lot of them do.
Shit devs. Yeah. Beware. Beware. Moving along. If you're using BTC Pay Server's Ellen Bank plugin, you are being urged to update to version 1.8.9 ASAP. The critical vulnerability has been found in Ellen Bank, an external plugin you can optionally use in the BTC Pay server. If you're using it, update immediately to the newest version, version 1.8.9, to mitigate. Now it's BTC Pay server. So Ellen Bank allows users to use their Lightning node as a use Ellen Bank's Lightning node as a custodial account system with separate Lightning wallets for non admin users, such as individual stores, friends, or family, been notified of a critical vulnerability in the Ellen Bank plugin. Dennis took to Noster to warn everybody. So if you're using that, be aware. Does not affect BTC Pay server. You're only affected when running the Ellen Bank plugin.
Yeah, it's a specific plugin.
Uh-oh. Thought we had breaking news. I think it's news we can share, though.
It is not.
Here's another thing in the Bitcoin space. Unchained announced earlier this week that they have to pause Bitcoin-backed loans to individuals due to external requirements. New loan originations to individual borrowers will be paused beginning January 1st, 2024. We will continue originating new loans for legal entities such as LLCs or corporations after January 1st for business or investment purposes. Kick in the gut. If you read between the lines here, due to external requirements, new loan originations to individual borrowers will be paused. It seems like this is something external to Unchained. The partners in the lending desk may be putting this pressure on them.
It's like we said earlier, the pressure is heating up across the board.
Yeah.
There will be a fight.
So be aware, if you have an Unchained loaned out as an individual, and a lot of individuals use the Unchained lending desk to get dollar liquidity and then keep their loan open and typically roll that over on an annual basis just so they don't have to sell Bitcoin. If that has been your user experience with the Unchained lending desk, just be aware you will not be able to do that next year. They did send an email out earlier this week too, to people who have loans out, that if you want to roll over your current loan and originate it before the 15th, you can do that. So that'll extend your loan till December of 2024 so that you can figure out time to pay that back between now and then if you weren't prepared to not be able to roll it over. So be aware. Kick in the gut.
Oh, I missed that part. But people can create an LLC if they want, and they can just get the rollover into that.
Right? Yes. I don't know.
Isn't that what the press release said? It was like, create an LLC and just, we can lend to that.
By way of example, the company also provided the following example. By way of example, Wyoming Limited Liability Company, including but not limited to the Limited Liability Company, not taxed separately from its sole owner, would remain eligible to apply for an Unchained loan for any investment purposes or business purposes, even after January 1st. If your loan is either an investment purpose or a business purpose, you may submit a loan application from either a new loan or a refinance of an existing loan to Unchained, as those remain eligible loan types even after
January 1st. Yeah, so it's technically not a rollover, but in practice, it can be like one.
Yeah.
And to be clear, this is because my understanding of Unchained loans is they're all 1 year terms.
You think? Yes. Yeah.
So you can't get like a 4 year loan from Unchained. It's typically every year you have to roll over and renew the loan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So be aware if you're out there, Jevy, are you in the comments correcting anything? No. So I think we did a good job on the Unchained section. Jevy hasn't said anything. Moving on. Block opens BitKey pre-orders in 95 plus countries, shipping expected in Q1 2024. So this is Block's hardware device that has been very much anticipated. Pre-orders are now live, selling for $150. Again, in over 95 countries.
One second.
Matt's got one, but to refresh anybody's memory of how the Bitcoin operates, it is a physical device that has a private key on it. It's biometrics. It uses your fingerprint to verify and sign a message. It'll be paired with the BitKey app, which is a wallet, and you'll have a key that lives there. And then with this rollout of the pre-orders, Block also announced that their first corporate partners will be the third key signer in this 2 or 3 quorum are Cash App and Coinbase. So the way it will work is you'll have your BitKey hardware device, which is separate and biometric. You need your thumbprint to sign a message. It's NFC enabled too. So then you'll have your BitKey wallet, which is your phone wallet, which will produce a private key from your secure enclave on your phone. And to make a transaction, you'll need 2 or 3 keys. So you'll either use your BitKey NFC sign on your phone and then sign on your phone and broadcast a transaction. Or if you don't have your BitKey, you can sign on your phone and then get Coinbase or Cash App to sign the second key to its Quorum.
So the way the app works is you can set a limit that you don't need the device to sign to send. So you can be like, I want to be able to send $50 worth a day without using the device, or I want to send $200 a day without using the device. And so my expectation, my understanding of what they think it's going to be used for is that most people on a day-to-day basis won't be carrying around the BitKey. That'll just stay in a drawer or something. And then if you need it for a larger transaction, then you tap your fingerprint on it and then put it on the back of your phone to sign the transaction. Now, they made a very deliberate trade-off to not have a screen on it, which is, to me, is fucking insane. But we've talked about it in the past. Because you can't verify, you don't know what you're signing. Like if the phone is lying to you, you can't confirm it on the screen. That's why most hardware devices have screens on them now, because you want to verify the transaction on the screen of the device. Now, screens are expensive. So I understand that trade-offs are made to keep a device cheap and accessible for people. And it's a trade-off and you get less security out of it because it's a blind signer. But a $150 price point is way higher than I was expecting. So like this thing feels great in the hand. Like it's rock solid. Like if people's first Bitcoin experience is holding one of these and using their app, and the app is really simple. It's like super normie friendly app, very clean, very simple. Just send and receive Bitcoin. It's a good first time Bitcoin experience. Like it feels good in the hand. It feels like something you can trust and it feels high quality. But like what was the decision that it was like, oh, let's spend all this money on the dope stone and brass back and all this other stuff, but not on the screen if we're going to hit a 150 price point. Like I thought this was going to be like a loss leader and it was going to be like $25. And they were going to like ship it across Africa and stuff. But maybe it's just early. Maybe the plan is to get the cost down over time. But it's not for a hardcore Bitcoiner. It's for like a new coiner that might be keeping custody instead of keeping, you know, using a custodial wallet. And this is like their first self-custody situation.
Yeah. Trade-offs. It is, I mean, I've said this in the past, we've talked about this. It is cool to see Block experimenting with new custody design features. Because the other thing too is like you're not gonna have seed phrases with this, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's a seed phrase backup, but I haven't like updated the app recently or looked at that. But in setup there was no seed phrase backup.
How are they backing up encrypted file? Matt's dogs are whining. Is that the pup?
I have respect for the Block team. I like that, like you said, I like that they're pushing the limit. I am a part of their beta program.
Is that the pup?
My dog. Yeah, it's my new puppy. As soon as you ask me, he just wants to go hard right now. Let me load up the BitKey beta real quick. But then when they send me this, like I set it up right away, right? Like I pulled it out of the box. I was super excited. I wanted to try it out. It's like a new toy, right? And I got it set up in like 5 minutes, like 3 minutes. It was super fucking quick. It was just like follow the steps, boom, 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 done. So I don't remember necessarily when it happened. But I think the backup is like Google Drive, Apple Drive. They do force you to give them an email address or a phone number. This is not a privacy device. Like they can see all your transactions. Like, I mean, they have less trackers in the app than Ledger does, but You're using their node. They're in your multi-sig quorum. They can see your transactions.
Yeah, that actually brings up a...
The app is super smooth. I don't want to dox my addresses. But you see, like... No, yeah. You can't really tell. But
Matt's got $17.24 worth of Bitcoin. Holy shit.
It's super...
How'd you get... I tell you, you lost it all.
It's super clean. They took a lot of time to try and make something that was like really simple for end users. And I think it, also one of the things that I said a lot is like, it'll be a good test of like, we know multisig is not custodial. It is clearly not custodial, but we haven't really had a test of that in the legal system. And we see how they're doing it in all this other fucking shit hitting us on like FinCEN and Treasury and everything. So it's nice that Block can fight like the really expensive legal fight that it's self-custody and that they shouldn't have to do typical things that a money transmitter would have to do.
Yeah. Matt, the group chat wants to meet the pup. That being said, this brought up, somebody asked the question earlier, is Treasure similarly bad to Ledger? Nothing that Trezor has done to date, is anything in the realm of bad data security practices that Ledger has shown. But if you are using Treasure Suite, it is the equivalent to Ledger Live. I don't think they're using this tracker data. I don't know, but just something to be aware of. And so if you are using a Trezor, similarly with Ledger, it's recommended that you use something like Sparrow when using that hardware wallet, that hardware device. And I think with Sparrow, you can even create your private key with Trezor using Sparrow. I don't think you have to do that on Trezor Suite like you have to do that with Ledger Live. So Bryant Grizzle, to your question, similar. Trezor Suite is very similar to Ledger Live. So if you want to avoid pinging Trezor servers with all your data on your wallet, use something like Sparrow. There's a pup. Oh, he's licking your face. Fortunately, the video is not very clear. Hello, puppy. Did you name him Sale? Is that the puppy Sale? Did you name him Sale? You had to name him Sale. You're on mute. We're naming the dog now.
For well, instance. I'm muted. No, I didn't name him Sale, and I'm not doxing my puppy's name.
But look at those eyes.
He's going to be a big guy.
What's up, dude?
He hasn't realized yet that he's supposed to be quiet during rips.
He'll learn. All right, we've got software updates coming up. But before we get to that, maybe we should talk about Ocean Pool and them leveraging knots. And
what's your opinion?
Not cool to see op return transactions with what is it, more than 40 megabytes of data or kilobytes?
Just bytes,
not even. Yeah, so Ocean Pool is leveraging Bitcoin knots as their Bitcoin implementation, which is different than Bitcoin Core. It's a fork that Luke Dasher built years ago and has been leveraging personally. That's his node, his consensus node, and many other people have leveraged it, but that's what Ocean Pool is leveraging as their implementation of Bitcoin. And in that implementation, it does not recognize op return transactions with more than 40 bytes of data. And so that has made it so Ocean Pool will not mine transactions that include something like Samurai Whirlpool transactions because they leverage op return. No.
So
PayNims.
So yeah, PayNims use op return for the notification transaction. So like the setup transaction uses op return, and then the transaction zero So the transaction, that's the setup right before Whirlpool CoinJoin uses.
Yeah. So essentially it's a part of the Whirlpool flow. It's a part of Whirlpool flow.
The transaction zero right before you go into Whirlpool, not the actual coin joins, use a op return that is 46 bytes. So Luke's limit is, I believe, 42. So it doesn't include that. And then I don't know what the paynims want, but just for like a little op return history, because the op return, so the reason op return exists is because people were embedding things in the Bitcoin blockchain and we wanted a way to let them still do that if they're going to do that, but do it in a way that could be easily pruned by nodes. So the problem is, like, the more data that's stored in the Bitcoin blockchain, the more burdensome it is to run nodes going forward, right?
Particularly for people with low bandwidth.
Yes. And but also, like, on in terms of, like, actually, like, processing the chain and the transactions and catching up to tip. So the answer, Hidden Americans, is both dogs and kids. It's not an either or, to the guy in the comments. The dogs are fucking awesome. And I will die on this, you know. So the idea is that it's easily prunable, right? And there was all this arguments back in the day in 2013. And in 2013, op return was essentially created. And it was 80 bytes in core. Then February 2014, it got reduced to 40 bytes. Then November 2014, it got increased to 80 bytes. And then in October 2015, it got increased to 83 bytes. And since then, it's been 83 bytes. The Bitcoin Knots, which Luke runs, which is his fork of, it's his Bitcoin client, his implementation. The history on Bitcoin Knots is October 2013, he was at 80 bytes. Then 2014, he went down to 40. Then later in 2014, he went back to 80. Then 2015, he went to 83. And then May 2022, he went down to 42. So this is all technical stuff. And, you know, but there clearly was an attempt to specifically target coin joins. Now, everything gets a lot more complicated because people on both sides kind of hate each other and kind of hated each other before it even happened. And like one of the reasons, like BIP47 paynims is discouraged for implementation by wallets because Luke didn't like it in the beginning. So keep that all in mind. Miners can mine whatever transactions they want to mine. That is completely their right. Obviously, mining pools historically are the ones who construct the transactions, including Ocean. Ocean wants to move to Stratum V2, where individual miners can construct blocks and submit their templates. I don't know if Luke's going to be cool with them, including large op returns. I don't know how it works.
Ordinals. With, like, he's also not including ordinal transactions as well.
Not including ordinals. So miners can choose whatever they like. Mining pools can choose whatever they want to include. If they are selectively excluding transactions, they will ultimately receive way less fees than miners that are not. So they have a direct incentive not to do that. Last but not least, and I'm sorry about this puppy. it is an extremely weird way to launch a pool as the anti-censorship pool and then just off the bat just going crazy on choosing which transactions you want to include and which transactions you don't want to include. Like, if you want to launch as like the anti-ordinals pool, that makes sense to me. But it's just a really, really odd launch. And I want, like, there's going to be a lot more of this with mining pools not including certain transactions. And it's unfortunate to see if this feels like an own goal. And unfortunately, like, everyone's headstrong here. So there's pretty much no shot in hell that Samurai decreases, tries to decrease the bytes to 42 to get in there. And like, there's no way that Luke's going to fucking add 5 bytes or whatever, 4 bytes to his, you know, fucking implementation to make it happen. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, 99% of the hash rate is still mining those two transaction types. And I think Ocean's going to have a lot of trouble getting any kind of sizable hash rate as a result. So they should consider that. And then last but not least, I would say there's been a lot of almost doublespeak talk saying that this is not censorship, this is filtering, because mining pools can choose whatever transactions they want to include. They can even mine an empty block. They can take an out-of-band fee and mine a single fucking inscription for 4 megabytes, like we saw fucking Luxor do. And they can do any of this shit. And we hear people say, oh, it's filtering, not censorship. Well, I would say one thing. Like, if the problem that Luke has with op return data is that, you know, he thinks op return data is spam, then he doesn't accomplish anything for node runners if just 1% of the hash rate is doing it. He clearly would like nobody to mine that transaction. Like, that is the actual desire there. And to me, that's what reeks of censorship. And it's a poor precedent. It's a really bad precedent. And, you know, I was incredibly critical of Wasabi when they implemented blacklisting and they checked the inputs with a chain surveillance firm to blacklist bad inputs, quote unquote, bad inputs. And then when Swan comes and does the same thing to Wasabi, there's no ideological leg to stand on. It's like with America, it's like, well, you can't reasonably tell someone you're spreading freedom when we're not free here. It's fucking ridiculous, right? Like, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard. So anyway, I think the market is ripe for some mining pool disruption. I'm very positive about where that leads.
I am as well. It is a bit perplexing. Yeah, we were chatting about it earlier this week. I mean, echoing what you said earlier, but it's like, if you're going to launch this pool, why? Like you said, I mean, maybe you could see the argument for ordinals. I'm not a massive fan of them. I think they're pretty stupid. As a miner, it has been nice to see fee revenue go up, my sats revenue go up. However, I do think they're stupid, but never go as far to like censor them. But like, the double whammy of censoring ordinals and then this op return over 42 bytes, it's like, just shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing is fucking ridiculous, and it's a bit infuriating. But it is what it is. And the important thing is Bitcoin continues to work as designed. So don't freak out about it.
Don't freak out about it. We got a nice puppy on air right now. I think he's got to go to the bathroom.
He was downstairs and he was like upset that I was upstairs, and now he's upstairs and he's upset that my wife is downstairs. So now I'm going to bring him back downstairs.
All right, you bring him downstairs. Good time to transition to shout outs. We're getting to the software update section of the show. You got to go to the top 4 shout outs for a Rabbit Hole Recap 281. Fresh gold all time high. Before we do that, got to give a massive shout out to Fountain. I am on their test flight version of their 1.0 version, which will be launching to everybody hopefully in the next 2 weeks. And I must say, it is an insane improvement on the last version. I mean, Fountain is an incredible app. It's my go-to podcast app, my driver for participating in podcasting 2.0 and just listening to any podcast I want to listen to. This update's massive. I'm really excited for everybody else to get into it. So with that being said, let's jump into the top 4 boost of Rabbit Hole Recap 281. At open mic, 123,000 sats. Freaks, Purple Rain and Purple Pills unite. V for V over Noster meets a professional band tour at the legendary First Ave in Minneapolis, where Purple Rain was filmed and Prince started. Thursday, December 21st, 7 p.m., Ainsley Costello from Bitcoin Park, and Just Loud, who played Lollapalooza in 2019. Let's give these artists a powerful story to show to other musicians about value for value. All sats received and ticket proceeds in real life go to artist teams. Find at Open Mic and at Toonster on Noster, www.toonster.io. Stir name, an STR name for Odell. Toonster actually makes sense. I think Toonster makes sense because it almost harkens back to Napster.
It kind of sounds good.
Yeah.
So it's been a long week. I'm too tired to comment on your name, but cool project.
One of the few stirs that makes sense.
What?
One of the few stir names that makes sense to me.
Dude, the Noster ecosystem's growing so quickly, it's so hard to keep track of. Incredibly bullish.
Could have sworn we had another bigger boost in here, but I'm not seeing it right now. At Eric99, boosted 50,000 sats. Stay humble, stack sats. Thank you, Eric. At Letter6173, boosted 11,111 sats. Ones across the board. Pound drum boost. God, family, health. Focus on what matters. Agree with you, Letter6173. Thank you for the boost. At Bond, 5,432 sats. Be aware, freaks. The paper suits are not going to make it. They are not. Those are the top four boost. Rabbit Hole Recap 281. This is Rabbit Hole Recap 282. Thank you,
appreciate
Freaks, for joining us.
Thank you for the support.
Really appreciate it. And we're going to roll into software updates. I'm going to blow through these because I have to go. And then we're going to read a manifesto. I'm going to read it.
Go for it.
Bitcoin Core version 26.0 has been released. I mean, this is a major upgrade. So it probably should be mentioned. It's got P2P network improvements, pruning updates, and new RPCs, and more. So it's been in beta and testing for a while. It's now available to everybody. So the P2P layer, looks like BIP 324 was added. It's off by default, but when enabled, you can use U2 or V2 transport. It will be negotiated on a per connection basis with other peers that support it too. The existing V1 transport protocol remains fully supported. That's good. P2P upgrades are good to see. Moving on. Primal debuts on mobile app stores with iOS version 1.0.4. Android beta version 0.21.4 has been released as well. We discussed this last week.
No, I don't think we did we?
I thought we did. We talked about Apple fees, right?
I had Milan on Citadel Dispatch this week to discuss this, but the iPhone release is absolutely massive. Did we talk about this?
Yeah, because we talked about the 30% cut.
Oh, yeah. He corrected me, by the way. It's 15% cut in US and Canada and then 30% globally. But the wallet is powered by Strike. It has light KYC. It has limits. I think you can have 1 million sats in the wallet to encourage self-custody. And there's also limits on the buy side. So people don't like the whole idea is like a new corner comes in and they can like treat it like an in-app purchase if they have no sats. So they can get zapping right away, but you don't want the new user to just get raked on the 15% fee. So you can only purchase $5 at a time and you can only purchase up to $50 a day, but you can send in however much you want to send in. I mean, up to 1 million sats from an external wallet.
This is good guardrails. I don't think you should be holding more than 1 million sats on a mobile wallet like this, especially as the price is pumping. It's way too many sats.
For a lot of people, this will be their first experience interacting with Bitcoin. And you can it's a custodial wallet, obviously, but it's a fully functioning custodial wallet. So you can scan and like pay invoices and stuff like a regular wallet would.
Yeah, like I said last week, the buy Bitcoin experience is the best by far. Like being able to buy Bitcoin with Apple Pay directly is insane.
And I would say to the person being trying to gotcha me in the comments. Look, 1031 is an investor in, we support and invested in 36 Bitcoin companies. Okay, the full list is on 1031.vc. We disclose it all the fucking time. Samurai is one of the companies.
Who's gotcha? Okay? Yes. This is insane.
I try to hold our portfolio companies to even a higher standard than any other company because they reflect on us, obviously. Okay? I try and be as critical of them as possible. If Ocean was a portfolio company, I would be incredibly critical of them as well here. And if you've been paying attention, you've noticed that I am often critical of portfolio companies. If you want to listen to the Citadel Dispatch with Milan yesterday, we went into all the trade-offs that Primal makes. Very clear on the trade-offs. And then meanwhile, I will continue my work at OpenSats, providing no strings attached grants to dozens of open source Nostr contributors, including many competing clients to Primal. So cheers.
I don't see where this troll is. Where is he?
It's about the censorship filtering thing with fucking Primal, because Primal has a spam filter that you could turn on and turn off.
Optionality is good.
Or you can just not even use their caching server if you want, or you can even fork Primal because it's a false client. But I would just, yeah. I just don't know what, good luck. Ocean's not getting my hash unless shit changes.
And on that note, Open Mike is in the zap.stream live comment saying the artists and I are actually giving a live PlebChain radio, going live on PlebChain Radio Nostr podcast here in an hour. If y'all are interested, nostrnest.com/PlebChainRadio.
The reason I'm sensitive about Bitcoin spam conversations is because if you go down this rabbit hole far enough, it's going to be used against Bitcoiners trying to use Bitcoin privately in freedom oriented way. Like it's always been the most vulnerable part. Like the suits are here and now this shit is about to start getting serious. So if you don't want to mine inscriptions, like I agree, like ordinals are pretty much only scams or ordinal land. Like I don't even know what the fuck's going on with that Ordi token. The ordinals is not even based on chain. It's just completely external. Like it doesn't, like inscriptions are in the chain or whatever, but if you want to like not mine inscriptions and not have that fee, like power be to you. But it just seems like such a fucking own goal.
Agreed. Yeah. Hello, Bitcoin. I see you in the Nostr chat. Responding in the chat. He was the 60,000 sat donation that was not read. It's because it's not showing up in Fountain. Let me go back and double check. I'll refresh, see if it's there. No, it's not there. Because I remember seeing it earlier. And I can't recall what the message was.
I see Kieran in the comments saying Primal launches global buy BTC before strike should be the headline raffle. By the way, Kieran, you're fucking crushing it on Zapstream. Like the progress you've been making is so fucking impressive. It's going to fucking kill Twitch. It's the better version of Twitch. Actually, like Strike has buy Bitcoin in like 50 countries right now. But Jack is so fucking traumatized by making promises and then under delivering. He's just focused on shipping rather than talking about it so much. But this wallet is actually powered by Strike. So.
With that being, I will read Hello Bitcoin, $60,000 boost. To all of the German freaks, I recently started a Bitcoin-only YouTube channel. No price charts, no breaking news, no blue checks. I cover ideas, books, and articles. Please consider subscribing to Hello Bitcoin on YouTube. Hello Bitcoin, excuse me. H-A-L-L-O, Bitcoin. Thanks and keep up the good work. Both were part of why I started the channel, to get the signal out. Peace and love. Peace and love to you. Hello Bitcoin. I will send the PR to the Fountain team that not all boosts are showing up because it was there. I remember checking this morning and seeing it there. I knew we were missing one. Shout out to you. Hello Bitcoin on YouTube. Go check it out. We need more German Bitcoin education leaders out there. So thank you. Hello Bitcoin. Moving on. Software updates. LND version 0.17.3 beta has been released. It's a hot fix release. Beware. Ride the Lightning RTL version 0.15.0 beta has been released with CLN REST for Core Lightning. PageWin CLI version 0.0.1 alpha has been released. A command line PageWin client for Bitcoin Core. That's pretty cool. Bitcoin Keeper version 1.1.8 has been released with custom multisig coin selection and more. Good to see coin selection in there and custom multisig. Pleb Devs released a backend course for Lightning app development. Logan, do you have anything on this one?
Go take the course.
Do you have any more?
Go do it.
Do you have any more color on this?
I made a video.
Do you want to play it?
Play the video.
It's showing me a white screen right now.
It's a great why video.
Why are you assuming that the screen's race? Terrible shoe.
Is here. This is PlebDev's course number 2. In the first course, we wrote our first lines of code and we learned the basics of front-end with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, React, and we built a fully functioning Lightning wallet, but on the front-end only. Now in the back-end course, we're going to learn back-end from its fundamentals, and we are going to build a server, an API, and a database to work as a back-end for a Lightning wallet. And a connection to a Lightning node.
How long is this video?
So you'll have a full stack, fully functioning Lightning wallet. The time is now to become a backend Pleb developer. So join me there.
Our poor podcast listeners, half of it had no sound.
Logan, when are you going to bring those skills over here? You're a very good video editor.
It was a dope video, though.
Do you want a video about the shoe reference?
Well, it was funny when they were filming that shoe reference. I just so happened to be walking behind them and made fun of Ben pretty hard. Was that the take that wound up getting in the end video?
Probably.
Right before I walked by?
I think so.
We're doing some cool things here in Austin. Keeping Austin weird over there at Pleb Labs. Go check out the Pleb Dev course. Where are you? What happened? What happened to your lighting? You're gone.
The dog's going fucking crazy. Now my other two dogs are going crazy with him, and I just walked outside. I opted out.
And sometimes you just have to opt out. Go check out the Pleb Devs course. When does it start, Logan? Or is it just running online all the time?
It's there. It's on Udemy.
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 Go check it out.
How expensive is it?
I don't remember. That was not part of the video.
Is there a link to it? Can we find out?
There probably would have been if I had that still open. You can go to plebdevs.com for links to everything.
There we go. There's the shill. Plebdevs.com. Go check it out, freaks.
Go check it out. All right, I gotta get home. But we do have one thing on the list. There was a manifesto written. We love manifestos here at Rabbit Hole Recap. It was written by a gentleman named Matt O'Dell, and it's titled The Blue Check Manifesto. Freedom is not granted. It is taken and defended. Our freedom is being eroded on nearly every front, yet few push back, blinded by greed and lust. Most with influence in our society shepherd us towards darkness for more power and more money. Incentives are designed by massive corporate institutions and billion-dollar companies focused on squeezing out as much money as possible from billions of digital slaves. Tracked, manipulated, censored, sold, this is our reality. Can you see it? Can you see where this leads? Everything I do is tracked. It is already a lost cause. A common narrative, disappointing and frustrating. Millions see the problems, but most have given up hope. How did we end up here? Humans have relied on trust since the dawn of time. We built families, we built communities, we built businesses, we built new technologies, we built governments. Trust is how humans have improved our standing in the world. Trust will always be essential, but at scale it remains vulnerable. Systems that require trust are easily corrupted in the modern age. This vulnerability is amplified due to the scale of these systems controlled by a powerful few whose incentives are at odds with the millions who trust and rely on them blindly. I was once a Twitter power user, my only social media for the past decade. It was not without fault, but it was an incredibly powerful tool. It held the promise of billions being able to communicate freely and build off of each other's thoughts and ideas. Then censorship escalated. Then identity checks began. Refusing to comply effectively shadow banned you. In retrospect, it was inevitable. Trust does not scale. The systems we rely on are too easily corrupted. The massive centralized institutions that govern so much of our lives are broken. What has worked in the past is not sufficient for the future. We can do better. We must do better. Nobody is coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. We have the tools that empower individuals and minimize trust. Protocols such as Bitcoin and Nostr that are not controlled by any entity enable us to communicate and interact freely and without permission. Freedom Tech is our hope, but real change will require millions to stand up and take responsibility for our future. Say no to TikTok, Google, WeChat, PayPal, Facebook, Twitter/X, and the countless digital slavery companies that join their ranks. Their incentive is to control you, and they are winning. Build, support, and utilize Freedom Tech tools instead. If not us, then who? If not now, then when? We will not live in a pod. We will not eat the bugs. We will not get the blue check. We will not use CBDCs. Use Freedom Tech. Live free or die. Odell. Boom. Beautiful, sir.
Let's fucking go.
Live free or die.
Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love, freaks. Dickie.